Perek Dalet Pasuk Chav Zayin, page 312. The last story we learned was Moshe Rabbeinu was on the way and he didn't do a bris for his son, and the Malach came like a snake around whoever, and Sipora just did the bris and everything straightened out. So V'ir Meshem Aladin, Hashem said to Aaron, Lech L'kras Moshe Midbara, go meet Moshe in the Midbar. And the Medrash says over here that it was a simultaneous thing. Moshe Rabbeinu heard it and Aaron heard it. Moshe Rabbeinu was told, go to Egypt, and Aaron was told simultaneously, go meet your brother. Like the Pasuk says in Tilim, Achas du shamayti, Achas diber alikim, God speaks one, Shtaim du shamayti, you hear it as two. Like Zachar and Shamar, you know, the voice came out simultaneously by the Ten Commandments. Zachar and Shamar, they heard it at the same time. So the same, the Medrash says that when Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to go to Egypt, at the same exact second, the same word was split into two. That was the first internet split, whatever you think.
Three-way calling,
yeah. Go return to Mitzrayim. Okay? So what happened? Vayelach v'yivkasheu ba'ar alikim. They met at Har alikim, the mountain of God, which obviously is Har Sinai, which is in between Midyan and Mitzrayim. That's why they met there. Vayishak loy, and Aaron kissed Moshe Rabbeinu. Meaning, not like Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, said, oh, Aaron's going to be upset, let him be the leader because he's older and he's going to be upset if I become. On the contrary, Aaron was very excited. He kissed him, he hugged him. He was very excited that Moshe Rabbeinu was given the opportunity to go take the Jews out of Mitzrayim. Okay, so what happened? Vayaged Moshe le'Aaron, Moshe Rabbeinu told Aaron, it's called David Hashem Asher Shalach, all the words of Hashem that he sent him. Ve'ez kol ha'esis Asher Tzivo, and all the miracles that God showed him. You know, as he showed Aaron the miracles that Hashem told him. And, as it says, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't tell Aaron to show off, but it was basically Asher Shalach that Hashem sent him to do it. You know, there's an interesting thing we're reading about in the weeks that just happened in Chumash, in the Parsha. We read, it's a similar thing. You know, there's a question everybody asks. Yosef was a very smart boy. He was 17 years old, but you can imagine he was a great tzaddik and a very intelligent guy. If you tell somebody something and you know they hate you because of it, if you're a smart guy, you're not going to keep telling it to them. Right? Here Yosef's having dreams about all the brothers bowing to him and the sun and the moon, everything's going to bow to him. What is he, kind of fool? Keep telling it to the brothers if they know that they hate him. And they hate him more and more. What is he doing? No, but he wasn't a fool. We're fools. Yeah, but by tzaddikim it doesn't work like that. And also, what is the Torah telling us? So the answer is very interesting. The commentators explain that Yosef, and this is the same concept over here, so to speak. Yosef felt, and he knew, that the visions that he got in the dreams, you know, about the bundles bowing down to him and the sun and the moon, he maintained that these were prophecies from God. And there's a law that a prophet who gets a prophecy and doesn't tell it is chayev misa, God kills you. There's what's called hakevish es nevosei. If you hide your nevuah, you don't tell a nevuah that God told you a prophecy to tell it, then you're punishable by death, by God. Not the courts, but God. Yeah, Yonah was punished because God told him to do something, go to Nineveh, and tell him, you know, and he was punished for it. That's why he got swallowed up by the fish and so on. So Yosef, even though he knew the brothers hated him for it, but basically he had no choice because God said this is a prophecy that you have to tell them what's going to be. The same thing over here. Moshe Rabbeinu is telling Aaron that God told me to take the Jews out of Egypt. It's not, God forbid, in a way of haughtiness. God said to him, you got to tell Aaron that this is what's going on. You have to tell him. So it's not a din of gaiva, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was bragging because of it. So the commentators explain, he had no choice to do it. Okay, and it says, what was the greatness of Moshe and Aaron? That they were never jealous of each other. Even though basically one became the king, one became the Kohen Gadol, each one has its advantage, so to speak. Who's greater, you know? They were not jealous of one another. And it's interesting, in the Rambam, in the Laws of Kings, you know, the din of a melech, he says that a Kohen Gadol, when he comes to the king has to stand up for the Kohen Gadol. But in public, no. In public, the king stands up for nobody. The king is number one publicly. But privately, the Kohen Gadol, in a certain respect, is even greater than the king because he's like God's representative in the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, the Kohen Gadol, the king stands up for the Kohen Gadol. So, you know, you see, like, there could be jealousy between the king and the Kohen Gadol, who's greater, you know, what? Moshe and Aaron were brothers. There was absolutely no jealousy. They were both successful, and they loved each other, and he kissed them, and he hugged them, and there was no problem at all. Okay, so now it says, Choftes. Now Moshe and Aaron were given a mission by God to go to all the elders, gather the elders, and go to Paro to let the Jews out. So it says, Vayelech Moshe v'Aaron, Moshe and Aaron went, Vayasos kol zikne b'nei Yisrael, they gathered all the elders of the Jewish people, and Vayidaber Aaron es kol advarim asher dibur Hashem al Moshe, Aaron spoke all the things that Hashem said to Moshe, Vayasa eisus lein einei ha'am, and he did the miracles in front of the people, in front of these elders. Now, what's going on over here? Okay, let's do one more pasuk because then it makes it better. Vayamin ha'amin, they believed them. Vayishmon, they heard. Ki pakad Hashem is b'nei Yisrael, the God remembered the Jews. Vechira esanyam, and he saw their affliction. That's what they said. Vayikto vayishtachva, and they all bowed. The nation bowed, in other words, they accepted, they believed it. Now, why shouldn't they believe it? Because logically, there's no reason to believe what Moshe and Aaron said. Not only is there no reason to believe it, they had a reason not to believe it. Why? Hashem told Avram Avinu that the Jews are going to be enslaved in Egypt for 400 years. They were only there 210 years. After 210 years, meaning midway through the 400 years, Moshe Rabbeinu is coming and said, oh, by the way, guys, God has taken you out. So logically, they should say, wait a minute, what do you mean God's taking us out? We were told we're going to be here 400 years. What do you mean we're going to be going out now? You can't. There's no reason to believe him. Yet, the Pasuk says that they believed him. Now, what logic is going on over here? So it says as follows. The Jews multiplied a tremendous amount. Like we learned before, six in a shot. Now, if you make a cheshbon, like he just says over here, if 1,000 people have to be in Egypt for 400 years, 2,000 people should be there half time, 200 years. So that's why, even though in their minds it was a question, what do you mean God's taking us out of Egypt if it says we're going to be in Egypt 400 years? So they had a logical explanation why to believe, because they said, well, we guess it's such a heavy duty slavery and so many more Jews were enslaved, so therefore it makes sense that he can take us out earlier. But that's basically the greatness of the Jews, that God was willing to take them out earlier. And that's why they bowed and they gave thanks to God that the Hashem was taking them out earlier. The truth is, the 400 years was a calculation, a correct calculation, but it was from the birth of Yitzchak, not from the time they actually went into slavery. So the 400 years was a calculation of 400 years, and therefore, but they didn't know this at this time. There was Hashem's kindness that he took the Jews out early. Now, they also believed, because Aaron did the miracles, and he also did, Aaron was taught by Moshe, was called the Shema Mefedesh, the real name of God, that you could do miracles with and wonders with and all that stuff. So they told, Moshe told Aaron, Aaron told it to them, so they believed it. In addition to the fact that they believed it, there was another thing. We learned already, they went to Sarach Bas Asher, who was the oldest living Jewess that was alive then, and they said, you know, this guy Moshe came and he said he's taking the Jews out of Egypt. So Tzarech Bas Asher said to them, what expression did he use? So they said he used the word
Puk.
No, she wasn't Persian.
What do you mean? No,
he
wasn't
Persian. Huh? Part of the first
Persian.
Yeah, but she wasn't Persian.
She's saying she was buried. She never died.
One opinion says she never died, so she can't be buried anywhere.
Yeah.
Now, even according to the opinion that says she might have died, but one second. When Tzarech Bas Asher was alive. I know, one second. She didn't die yet.
Okay, but there's a big, big historical place that they call it Tzarech Bas Asher.
1 minute. First, you ever saw her buried there?
It's not buried there, but that's the place.
Yeah, she passed by there once. She lodged there one night.
She did?
Yeah.
Why would she go to Tehran for? She went for a shidduch.
Persian food.
She went for a shidduch.
Persian food.
She went by a char.
One legend that says that she ascended up to Gandhi after
Shema. Right.
That's the place that they say that she went up to.
That's where she ate and she drank and she died and she was born. It's all irrelevant to this point. Tzarech Bas Asher. One second. Tzarech Bas Asher was the one that in last week's parsha told Yaakov that Yosef is alive. So Yaakov Avinu gave her a bracha according to one opinion, the Medrash, she should never die. Even if she did die, it's totally irrelevant, because one thing we know for sure, that she was born in Canaan, she came down to Mitzrayim, she went out of Mitzrayim, she went into Eretz Yisrael, she was there during the first Beis Hamikdash, she definitely lived a very, very long period of time. For sure not. Maybe Tehran, but not there. Now, when they came to Tzarech Bas Asher, who was the only one that remembered Yosef. In fact, Tosfos asks in the Gemara in Saita, why did they go to Yosef's great-grandchild was alive, and he was there at the time Yosef told them. So Tosfos answers, it could be that the secret of the Geula was only told to Tzarech Bas Asher. They come to Tzarech Bas Asher, and they said, this guy Moshe Ben, whoever he is, they didn't know who he was in Midian all his life. They said, we don't know, this person Moshe is coming and saying that God's taking the Jews out of Egypt. So she said to them, what expression did he use? So she said, he used the expression like it says over here, Ki pokad Hashem, pokad pokadati. He used the word pokad that God remembers. So when Tzarech Bas Asher heard that Moshe Rabbeinu used the word pokad, which was the expression that God said that Yosef told the Jews at that time, Pokad Yifked Alekim Eschem, God will remember you. So when Tzarech Bas Asher heard that Moshe Rabbeinu used the expression that God said he's going to be using for redemption, so Tzarech Bas Asher said, this guy is for real. He's for real, and you can believe him. So that's how the people knew it, they believed it, even though, like we said before, there was a reason not to believe it, because it was in the middle of the 400 years, they shouldn't have gone out yet. But nevertheless, they remembered it. Okay. Now, one of the reasons, the Medrash says also, that one of the reasons why Hashem made Moshe Rabbeinu leave Egypt early, you know, that they shouldn't come along and say that his father Amram told it to him, and that's how he knows it, but it's not, so to speak, a revelation from Hashem. He wanted that people should know that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu the expression, pocket pakadati, that he's going to take him out. Okay, basically though, what the bottom line is that they believed in it, and which by the way shows the greatness of Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, the Jews will not believe me. And Hashem said, you're speaking Lashon Hara against the Jews. And that's where Moshe Rabbeinu's hand got leprosy. And therefore, Hashem is, so to speak, proving the point that the Jews did believe. Because Jews have the concept of emuna under all circumstances. Okay. So now in Perek Hey, it starts as follows. Now starts the fun with Pari, so to speak. V'acha bo Meshe v'Aaron, afterwards Meshe and Aaron came. V'yemid ol Pari, and he said to Pari. So right away Rashi asks the question, if they went with all the elders, what happened to all the elders? They were going with the elders, what happened to all the elders? So they chickened out one by one. They chickened out, and the only one left at the bottom line when they went into the palace to speak to Pari was Meshe and Aaron. I'll explain this in a second. It's a very good point. 1 second. So therefore Hashem punished them. If you remember later on by Har Sinai, when Hashem gave the Torah, Moshe said, you guys, the Kohanim, you know, the Zkenim, you guys stay down. Moshe is going to go himself. What happened to the Zkenim? Because they checked out early over here, so Hashem said, you're afraid? Then you're not going to go to Matan Torah like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had to go himself. Belief is a very broad concept that doesn't always permeate. In other words, ask a normal from Jew, do you believe in God? I mean, it's like, what's the question? Of course they believe in God. The truth of the matter is, if you believe in God, you would never sin. If you believe in God, how could anybody ever sin? So the answer is that the belief, the amunah that a Jew has, does not necessarily influence and permeate his existence, that it affects his action, his thought, and his speech. We discussed many times the Gemara in Brachas that says, it's a Gemara Chassidus brings down very often, Ganva pumach tarta rachmana karya, which means when a ganef, a thief, is about to break into a home, he davens to God that he should be successful. Now, the question is, obviously, the ganef believes in God, because if you don't believe in God, you're not going to daven to him. There's no question, right? So obviously, if the ganef is davening to Hashem, he believes in God. And if he believes in God, you don't have to be too intelligent to know that in the Ten Commandments it says, don't steal. Or in Torah it says, don't steal. Ten Commandments doesn't mean stealing, it means kidnapping, but it also means a form of stealing. Every person knows it's wrong to steal. Because everybody knows if you steal, you get caught. Right? So obviously the question is, if the guy believes in God, and the proof of it that is that he's praying to God, so why is he stealing? In other words, while he's doing something wrong, he's davening to Hashem that he should be successful in doing something God told him not to do. So what's the answer to the question? And also, like, what's the Gemara telling us with this? What's the Gemara telling us? It's not a story. The Gemara is telling us a fact. That a ganef, when he's about to break in, could daven to Hashem. What does this mean? It means a Jew can believe, but the belief is very superficial. It only influences you indirectly, not directly. If Amunah influences you directly, then you wouldn't do any Avedas. Amunah, belief, that is only superficial, indirect, generally speaking, you'll believe, but that won't stop you from sinning. The role of Moshe Rabbeinu, he was the first, that's why I'm using him, but a Rebbe in every generation, Moshe Rabbeinu is called in the Zohar, Raya Mehemna. Simply, Raya Mehemna means the Aramaic for Raya Neman, which is a trusted shepherd. But Chassidus explains that the Raya Mehemna does not mean a trusted shepherd. It means a shepherd of trust, a shepherd of belief. What does it mean, a shepherd of belief? A shepherd, the role of the shepherd is to feed the flock. What's the concept of feeding the flock? Eating, feeding is you take the food and you digest it internally. If you're going to put the food on your stomach, you will not get full. You need to eat the food, chew the food, swallow the food, and then you're able to digest it, and then you're able to live properly. The role of Raya Mehemna, which means a shepherd of belief, means he feeds the Jews' belief. What do you mean he feeds the Jews' belief? He feeds them emunah that they should internalize it, that they should eat emunah, meaning it should impact them, influence them on the way they live. That is the role of Moshe Rabbeinu. So a person says, yeah, I believe. When it comes to the practical, it's very possible that they won't listen. That they won't do. Because as long as you don't digest the amuno, it doesn't work that well. If you remember, we mentioned a few times by Fabrengas, whatever, we told the famous story of Shmuel Munkus, a chassid of the Alter Rebbe. He was once going to the Rebbe, you remember in a second, he was going to the Rebbe, it was freezing, and he was walking, and finally he got a ride, with somebody gave him, offered him a ride, and he was sitting in the back with the barrels full of mashke. He was sitting next to barrels full of mashke. But he was freezing because he couldn't drink the stuff. He was only sitting next to it. And he said to himself, wow, if I can only drink a little, I'm surrounded by it. You know, it's influencing me, but it's not internalized, because if I would drink a little bit, I would get warm. And he came to the Alter Rebbe, and the Alter Rebbe asked him, how was your trip? He said, I learned an unbelievable lesson in serving God. You could be surrounded with Yiddishkeit, you could be surrounded with warmth. You know, mashke is warm, keeps you warm. You can be surrounded with warmth and Yiddishkeit and everything, but if you don't internalize it, you're going to be cold. And you internalize a little bit, it warms you up. So the same thing is with amuna. A person can have a lot of amuna, and even the ganef, who's stealing, has a lot of amuna, but it doesn't affect them. They believed, and it came, bottom line, and we're going to see in the next psukim, once life became miserable for them, all of a sudden their belief went out the window.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What is exactly the place, like, you know, you have like the Benoni, those people that have this emuna, but they don't apply it, they don't practice it, are they also part of the Benoni?
No, they're from Esfahan. Where is it? Relax.
No, it's very interesting.
What do you mean, where are they?
Means, like, we all come from background who had some tradition, a lot of belief, but we never really...
A Jew by nature, by birth.
Has emunah.
Maminim b'nei ma'aminim.
Okay.
They're believers, the children of believers.
If they don't apply it, where does it bring the Jew?
Where does it bring the Jew?
Yeah.
When push comes to shove, they'll scream out Shema Yisrael.
Okay, but we talked about the emunah that is not internalized. It means it's not applied.
Correct.
So it means for generations, the Jews have been traditional, conservative, but they never really, they drive on Shabbat, they eat non-kosher food, but they think they're very, very much Jewish.
Right.
Because they're part of the Jewish people and nobody can tell them you're not. And even they
and they'll be willing to give up their life to be a Jew.
Well,
no, I'm saying they'd be even willing to give up their life to be a Jew. Nevertheless, the amuna, that's when push comes to shove. That's when, bottom line, the Yiddishkeit comes out. But when it comes to a daily practical way, that it doesn't affect them. Because they still think they're still Jewish, even though they're not keeping.
Even they're atheists?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they claim they're atheists.
Thanks. You know, even when you get, if you get, I don't want to use the word on the tape, but when somebody gets saying, you say, the God, whatever, even an atheist will say that.
But I thought, like, if there is an assimilation after the second or third generation, it's lost.
Because the bintelid is always there. A Jew is a mamina b'nei mamina. Vayamin ha'am, they believed.
Mm-hmm.
What? You don't have to equal time, yeah? Oh, yeah. That's exactly what we're saying.
I mean, sometimes it's difficult for people. I mean, it's not that they don't believe. But
it means that the belief is not internalized.
No, but it could be internalized.
You know, there's a famous story with the Rebbe. The Rebbe was once speaking by Fabrengen about Mashiach. Mashiach's coming, he's coming, he's coming. So this big rabbi from Montreal was sitting behind him. The chief rabbi of Montreal was sitting behind the Rebbe. And he turns to the Rebbe after a sicha, by the singing. He says to the Rebbe, Rebbe, these are all chassidim. They all believe. You know, you're making it like, you know, we need to believe in the coming of Mashiach. It's imminent. He says to the Rebbe, these are all chassidim. They all believe. So in front of, he was in back of the Rebbe, talking to the Rebbe like this. So in front of the Rebbe was a very rich guy from Montreal. I mean, very rich, a rich guy from Montreal. And the Rebbe turned to him and pointed to this guy. He says, "You know him?" "Sure, you know, Choshev Balabas in Montreal." So the Rebbe said to him, I don't remember if the Rebbe said an amount, but the Rebbe said, paraphrasing it, "Ask him for $1 million loan and you'll pay him back when Mashiach comes. See how fast he's going to give it. See how fast he's going to give the loan. Tell him you'll pay him back when Mashiach comes." You know what I mean? We told the story the other week in Shul. We told the story. Somebody told the story. Huh? You told the story. That there's a guy in a shtetl who didn't have a job. Finally, he was looking for a job, so he found that there was a big shul with a tall ceiling with a bell. And they offered him a job to go up on the ladder every day. And wait up on the ladder for Mashiach to come. And when Mashiach comes, he should ring the bell. And for that job, they offered him 2 ruble a day, whatever. So the guy said, "Listen, you didn't have a job, it's better than nothing." He took the job. He comes home, he says to his wife, "Guess what, I got a job." "What's your job?" "I have to go up there waiting for Mashiach to come and to ring the bell." "How much does it pay?" 2 ruble a day. So she says, "Listen, it's not a lot of money, but it's a lifelong job." You got it for life. You're set for life for that job. You know what I mean? Emuna. It's wonderful. Everybody believes in Mashiach. Yeah? Go over to the big believers in Mashiach and say, "Lend me $1 million until Mashiach comes."
1,000.
1,000. Forget a million, right. "Lend me $1,000 until Mashiach comes." That's the difference if you believe or you believe. There were people, great. You know, nowadays everything is commercialized, but you know, years ago, kinnis for Tisha B'Av, you know, the prayers we say Tisha B'Av morning, that whole book, they used to make them soft-covered, very, very cheaply made. Why? Because they said, Mashiach's coming, we're not going to need this anymore. It's not it's not a long-term investment, you know, you don't have to sell an expensive one. And there were people, there were great people, every year after kinnis, when they finished the kinnis, they put it into Seamus to bury it. They said, "Next year we don't need this because Mashiach's coming." Right? In Tavshin Beis in 1942, when the previous Rebbe came out, La'auta L'Tshuva La'auta L'Gula, a very strong campaign that Tshuva and Mashiach, you know, Tshuva and Mashiach. So there was somebody that after Pesach had such belief that Mashiach's coming, he made all his Pesach dikadishes chametz dik. He said, "We don't need him next year. Mashiach's coming." You know? That is called a certain level that belief permeated the person. You know, as long as belief doesn't hit the pocketbook, belief is shvacha maisis. I mean, there is a concept of emunah. There is a concept of bringing the emunah into practical. So here you have, just to answer your question, you have vayamein ha'am, they believed. But a little bit later, they said, "You know what? Come on, let's separate the issues.
Let's get real here.
You have a lifelong job. Let's get real. You know what?"
I just want to say, remember the earthquake that we had 10 years ago or so?
Yeah, I was around there.
But I remember praying and I had no trouble praying and davening. You know, so I just wanted to confirm what you're saying.
Okay.
Here, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
94.
Okay. Anyway, bottom line is Meshi was going to Pari and everybody backed off. So Meshi and Aaron came, Vayemro Pari, and they said to Pari. Now there's a whole story over here in the Medrash. It wasn't so easy to get into Pari. Pari had ferocious lions all around the palace, and the only time you were able to go into Pari was when it came feeding time, when the lions went out to eat. So that was the only time somebody was feasibly able to go to Pari. Moshe Rabbeinu went into the broad daylight and he got rid of the lions. He took the stick and all of a sudden the lions became like little lambs and they followed Moshe Rabbeinu into Pari. And Pari says, "One minute, what's going on over here? You know, these guys are here." And he right away called him Bilam and he said, "Bilam, what's going on over here? Who are these guys coming in? What happened to the lions?" And he said, "Well, we got to check them out. They must be witchcrafters." because they're able to, with sorcery, to calm down the lions. So that's what happens. So they come to Pare and they say like this, Koyamar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. This is what God, Hashem, the God of the Eden, says, Shalach Asami, send away my nation, V'yochegli Bamid, but let them celebrate for me in the desert. He said, basically, you know, let the Jews go. So Vayemir Pari says to them, Mi Hashem, who is this God, Asher Eshma Bekeilei, that I should listen to him, the Shalach Es Yisrael, to send away the Jews, Le Yadayti Es Hashem, I don't know this God, V'gam Es Yisrael Le Yashalech, and I'm not sending out the Jews. So the Medrash says, the Pari had a book, Pari had a God book, like a God dictionary. He looked up, he had all the guides in the world, all the Avedas artists in the world he had in this book. So now he says, what's your God's name again? He says, Hashem. He said, I gotta look it up in the book. He looks it up in the book. He says, it ain't here. No, this is the man who died, just Hashem. I don't know such a God. He saw Mayav, Ma'ame, and Sida, and all the other places. He said, I don't know what you're talking about. So he says, Moshe Rabbeinu answered, and the Medrash says with the parable. He says, there was a Kohen. Now, a Kohen, we know, can't go into cemeteries, right? But there's a Kohen that had a very lazy slave. Very lazy guy. And one time the Kohen was outside of the city, and the Eved started looking for his master, who happened to be a Kohen. So where does he look for him? He looks for him in the cemetery. Maybe he's hanging around the cemetery. So he asks people, maybe you saw my master. So the people say to him, you fool. You're not going to find your master here. He's a Kohen. He can't be in a cemetery. You're looking in the wrong place. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to Pari, you're looking for my God in the Aveda Zara book. You're not going to find my God there. What are you looking for him in the Aveda Zara book? My God is the God that created heaven and earth and created everything. And you're looking in the wrong place. You're never going to find him. Now, the obvious question over Yechsidus asks, and a lot of the commentators ask the question. Here, Pari says the expression, Lo Yadayti Es Hashem. I don't know God. Okay? Number one, in last week's Parsha, that we read last week, when Yosef, I'm sorry, not last week, 2 weeks ago, Miketz, when Yosef comes out of prison to interpret Pari's dream, and Pari said, I heard about you that you know how to interpret dreams. So Yosef said to Pari, Elokim Ya'ane Eshlom Pari. Elokim, God, will answer Paro's dream. He said the word Elokim. What do you mean he doesn't know God? So you want to answer, maybe it was a different Paro, different, you know, old Paro, new Paro. The same Paro, later on in Chumash, says, by the plagues, adds by Elokim, it's the finger of God. Pari himself says it's the finger of God, and here Pari says, I don't know this God. I mean, how could that be? So Chassidus explains a fundamental difference between Hashem, Yudke Vavke, that Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking about over here, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Yudke Vavke, and the name of Elokim. Elokim, like we learned many, many times, is numerically 86, which is the gematria for Hateva, the nature. Elokim is that level of godliness that deals with world. Creation is Bereshis Bara Elokim, Vayomer Elokim, Vayomer Elokim. Everything is Elokim. Creation, limitation, world is the name of Elokim. Yudke Vavke, in addition to the fact that it's Mahave, creator, and creator automatically means he's higher than the creation. But Yudke Vavke, if you just look at the name, Yudke Vavke, you have the words Haya, Hoveh, and Yihyeh, which is was, is, and will be, simultaneously in the same word, which means Hashem is past, present, and future together, meaning above nature completely. Elokim is nature. Yudke Vavke is the supernatural. Pari did have a connection to Elokim. Pari did have a connection to the natural level of godliness, to the level of Elokim. So Pari can say, Ads by Elokim he, Yosef can tell Pari, Elokim Yaneh Shalom Pari, he'll, you know, answer your problems, he'll take care of your dreams. That's only the level of Elokim. Moshe Rabbeinu is coming to Pari now and saying, Hashem Yudkei Vavkei says, the God of the Jews, which is Yudkei Vavkei, the supernatural level, Pari says, Lo yadayti es Hashem. I don't know that level of godliness. I have nothing to do with that level of godliness. So don't come along and give me the story that God, the God of the supernatural, is coming to talk to me. I have nothing to do with that level. But it doesn't mean that Pari didn't know godliness, because he said Etzba Elokim. But the level of Elokim, godliness in nature. Yeah. He probably said Yudke Vavke, not Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, not what we call Adnai. He probably said the name of Hashem Yudke, the way it's read, you know. But
would sorcery be supernatural since they changed the nature of things, or is it within nature?
Sorcery is above nature in evil, though. It's supernatural powers of evil. Even though, interestingly enough, the Rambam writes about sorcery, that it's shtusim, it's not real, it's fake, and it's tipshim, fools deal with sorcery. Because in many places in Chassidus, it's in Midrashim, it's explained that Avraham Avinu gave to Keturah's children, in the end of Chayisara, shame to Mamasalam. He gave him over the law, the concept of sorcery and impurity and everything. It's supernatural and evil. Meaning, as the Pasuk says, and Altrebi discusses this in the sixth parak of Tanya, Zelo Uma Zeo Solakim, one opposite the next God makes. Anything that exists in Kedusha must exist in evil. There's prophecy by Jews, Hashem made prophecy by Goyim of Bilam. Anything, if there's supernatural powers in Kedusha, there has to be supernatural powers in evil. But as far as godliness goes, he only had a connection to the level of nature. In last week's Parsha, Yaakov Avinu gave Pari a bracha that whenever he comes to the Nile, it's going to come up. He understood it was a bracha of God, but he thought it was, you know, the nature of the Nile to flow, overflow its banks and irrigate the canal, you know, the canals over there. And that was, he thought it was a natural way. So he says, Lo yadaitis Hashem, and therefore, v'gamas Yisroel le'ashaleach, I'm not going to send them out either. I'm not going to have anything to do with these Jews. Now, Pari said, the Medrash explains, Pari said to Moshe and Aaron over here, listen, Levi, remember we discussed that Shevet Levi didn't work in Egypt. So he said, Pari said to him, you know, you guys are, you know why you're troublemakers? Because you're bored. You don't work. You're looking for what to do. So you're making trouble. You're saying, let's go party. He said, you know what? We're going to start making you. In fact, it says, the manager said, Yeshaminim, that at that time, Pari got angry, and he said, okay, Levi's back to work now. Rashi doesn't agree with that, because Rashi says later in Chumash, the Moshe and Aaron were able to go back and forth to Aaron, from Aaron, because they weren't, to Pari, from Pari, because they weren't working. They weren't involved in the slavery. But one opinion says, no, that they were part of the slavery. Levi became part of the slavery. And then Pari started saying, you know what? You know what it is to get rid of so much day work? So much workers for free. And all of a sudden you're going to take them away. He said, you're Meshuggah, what are we going to give up so many workers? But Yehimil, so they said to him, listen, Elokeo Ivrim, the God of the Jews, Nikra Leinu called us, Nelchanon, he said, let us go, Derech Shleishis Yom Bamidbar, let us go 3 days in the desert, V'nizbuch al Hashem Elokeinu, that we should go to sacrifice to God, Penyiv Goeinu Badevei V'chodev, lest you will meet us or make problems for us with sword or death or whatever. In other words, we can't do it here. We got to go out of Egypt.
What's this 3 day?
Huh?
What do you mean by a 3 day journey?
why did they come up with 3 days? No, Pari said the opposite. No, Pari made it. According to Pari's calculation, he said, what are you, crazy? 3 days there, 3 days back, at least 1 day celebration. I'm going to give you off a week's work. Forget Pari said he used a 3+3+. In fact, when the Jews eventually left Egypt, and they went for 3 days, Pari thought this is still part of the first deal that we're only going for 3 days. And then when Pari let the Jews out, finally after the 10th plague, and he told the Jews, just get out of here, Pari also thought they're only going for 3 days. Like this original request. That's why the Jews went for 3 days, Pari sent advisors with them. Then when the Jews didn't come back, right, the advisors went back to Egypt. So they went back 3 days. The Jews traveled 3 days. So they're 6 days apart. And Pari traveled in 1 day on the seventh day, which was the state of sea split, right? Pari traveled in 1 day what took 6 days to travel. So the whole thing to begin with, what the Pari thought was, 3 days, this is what they're asking, and we only want 3 days. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu say 3 days? The commentators explain, because if he asked for more, he knew for sure Pari would say no. No, they were never planning to come back.
The whole thing, they were not asking him for them to let him go free. They were asking him for 3 days off.
Right.
This is the beginning.
Oh, wow. They were trying tricky to butter him up, or that was just like...
It was tricky.
What else is not?
It was tricky. They never be like...
They were Jews.
Jews,
I'm telling you.
They're Jews.
One second. Let me ask you a question. If you deal in business... You ask somebody for a deal. Okay? You say, do me a favor, I'm asking you to, you know, do this. And the guy says no. And finally you get the upper hand. You don't have to keep your original deal if he said no.
You flip.
Well, it's questionable.
What do you mean it's questionable?
It's question?
If I ask something from you and you say no, okay? Yeah. Right now you're in control. I ask you for a favor. And you tell me, no, I'm not going to do a favor to you. Then I get to a point that I don't need any of your favors. I can do whatever I want. Am I bound by a first agreement? No. Not even in business ethics, you're not obligated. Huh? So once Pari said no, the deal's off. Then when they go out, they do what they want. There's nothing wrong with that.
But why 3 days? Why not ask
exactly.
To let us go free? I mean, yes, Moshe went there and God was behind him 100%.
Exactly.
That's what we need. Yeah, why ask for 3 days? He said, let us go, or the 10 plagues are going to come up.
I imagine because he didn't want to ask too much. If he asked too much, he would get nothing. Could be. I still don't even hear a reason why 3 days. I don't know. I mean, there is a reason it's brought down because they didn't want to be being carbonous in an atmosphere of Egypt. They wanted to be 3 days away, which is a total separation from Egypt. But why up is 3 days? I don't know. What do you think? Hello?
Why didn't ask to go for free? Altogether.
Because, yeah.
And they took out their money. And
if you asked for 3 days, he said no, you can ask for good. Only Jews come and say to their boss, can I have a 3 day vacation? No. Okay, how about a week? Only a Jew has that chutzpah. And by the way, he might give it to you. He's so crazy. He's saying, forget it. Yeah, but Hashem wanted that evil agree itself sends the Jews out.
Don't you have to respect the king
that
is controlling?
Yeah, that's what he spoke to nicely. Pen should have said Pen Yevgocha. Rashi says Pen Yevgoenu means lest you will kill us. They should have said Yevgocha, lest you will kill us. They didn't say you to party, they said it in the collective word, in general word. If Hashem wanted to take the Jews out of Egypt, he could have just opened up the gates and Jews walked out. Mm-hmm. Right? That's not what Hashem wanted. Hashem wanted that Paro, as the king of Egypt, the strongest country, the worst country, this, they should be sending out the Jews. It's a big difference.
But he's a guy, he doesn't have free choice, according to you.
According to my religion, you mean?
A guy doesn't have a free choice.
Goys don't have any free will?
Only in their seven mitzvahs.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
So how come God made his heart stronger?
That's the whole question.
No.
They have a free choice.
Because of the same plagues, because he was showing God's power, at the same token, he had to make his heart
hard.
Harder.
Right.
So it would be equal.
Right.
So he has free will.
Doesn't have free will.
So how, if he doesn't have any free will, how come he made his heart
We talked both spoke about that last week.
Oh, okay.
Rabbi.
Yeah. In this idea before about having belief.
Yeah.
So like, if somebody's chasing somebody.
One second. Yeah.
Somebody's chasing somebody to hurt someone. It's a mitzvah to lie and not tell him where the person is, correct?
You don't have to lie. You don't have to say the truth.
What's that?
You're not allowed to lie necessarily, but I mean, if you talk about saving a life, for sure. But
yeah,
you're not.
But couldn't you say like
there's a Yiddish expression that a lie you're not allowed to say, but the truth you also don't always have to say. You know, you don't have to say the truth. If you could say, I don't know where he is, which is true, you don't know exactly where they are. They ran into a house, yeah? You know exactly where in the house they are. If you say, I don't know where they are, it's not a lie. But what does that have to do with this issue? I mean...
I got sidetracked.
No, I'm saying...
Because if you really a true believer,
in other
words, if you're completely embellished by belief, then you
can
say the truth and you trust God with
perfection. No. You know the famous story? Everybody knows the story. There was a flood. Okay?
Yeah, with the helicopter.
With the boat and the ocean liner and the helicopter.
Is
yeah.
The ocean liner now?
It went stages. A little boat, big boat, a helicopter. It got old, it grew whiskers. Okay? So the bottom line is, what did the guy say? I believe, I believe, I believe. And then he comes to God, he says, hey God, I believe. So God said, what do you mean you believe? I sent you a helicopter, I sent you a rowboat, I sent you this. What do you mean, you know? Just because you believe in God doesn't mean you don't have to do natural things.
It's all hide and seek.
The biggest believer in God will not walk out on the freeway in the middle of rush hour. Maybe then it's safe, the cars are not moving. But nobody's going to run out. Yeah, it's safe, and nobody's going anywhere. You're not going to run out on the freeway and say, hey, you know, I believe God's not going to hurt me. I mean, you know, according to Jewish law, if somebody's sick, and they say, well, I believe, you know, I don't have to go to the doctor, because I believe God is going to help me. That's you force him against his will to do it. What do you mean? But he believes. He believes, but God says he believes, but you have to do natural things, God says.
That's why we are higher than animals.
There's a guy that was interviewing his prospective son-in-law. There's also a famous Vart. A guy was interviewing his prospective son-in-law. He says, oh, it's very nice. I know you'll be going out with my daughter. How are you planning to, do you have a job? God will supply. You have this, God will supply. Everything, God, he's a big believer. When the interview finished, the wife asked her husband, no, what do you think about your future son-in-law? He says, one thing I know for sure, I don't know about him, but I know for sure he thinks I'm God. You know, God will give, God will do this, everything God. You know? Bottom line is, you gotta work, you gotta get a job, you gotta do things, you're sick, you go to the doctor, you don't walk on the freeway because you believe. You know, the Rebbe once spoke a sikha, by the way, that the belief in Lecheda, somebody can ask a question, you know, if my house needs remodeling or fixing or whatever, why should I do it? Mashiach's coming. So why should I do it for? Why should I plan something for 3 weeks from now if I believe every day Mashiach's going to come? Yeah? And the Rebbe explained in the sikha, it's not a contradiction. Believing Mashiach's coming does not take away from doing things in a natural way. That doesn't mean you don't believe in Mashiach. You know, there's an interesting halacha question if you're allowed to have life insurance. It's brought down in responsa. Obviously, not in the olden times, because they didn't have such a creature called life insurance. But Ramesha Feinstein has this letter from the Rebbe about it. If somebody is allowed to have life insurance, what's the question? Is that, so to speak, denying belief in God? You know, if you believe that Hashem will take care, and if you believe that Mashiach is coming, so what are you taking life insurance for? We're all going to live to see Mashiach. What do you need life insurance for?
Afterlife.
To spend money in paradise, you mean? We're going on a cruise in Gan Eden. A Gan Eden cruise.
The afterlife insurance.
The afterlife insurance.
There's a guy selling afterlife insurance.
So the answer is, again, the same point. That there's nothing wrong with halachically doing things that are naturally done, and that doesn't take away from the belief that Mashiach is coming. One thing has nothing to do with the next. We have to live in a way of natural life. Natural things, you have to take care of yourself, you have to plan for the future, you have to do whatever you have to do. But that doesn't take away the fact that Mashiach is coming. And the person believes that Mashiach is coming.
So do we buy life insurance?
Yeah. If you have the money to. Huh?
That's another
problem. I mean,
the premiums are high.
It depends if you're a smoker, a non-smoker, what type of car you have.
No. So now they ask you if your parents, they died before 65 years or after, then they charge you more.
Okay.
Because I tried to buy it last week.
Non-believer right here.
Non-believer number one.
It's for the
they're waiting for Mashiach, yeah. It's better that they should believe your God instead. Okay, let's just see one more thing over here. So the king of Mitzrayim said to Moshe and Aaron, Lama Meshav Aaron, why are you Meshav Aaron Tafriya Sami Meshav? Why are you stopping the people from working? Lechula Sivli Sechem, go work. Sirashi says, what do you mean go to work? Meshav Aaron didn't work. He said, he didn't mean the slavery work. He meant, you're bored, you have nothing to do with yourself. Go make your beds. I mean, go do something that you have to be doing. Why are you just doing nothing? So, that's came about. The Tesis also brings down that what we call Rashi, and he said that he also brings down the concept that they picked the day of Shabbos, like we said, that they picked. Moshe Rabbeinu told to Pari a long time ago, all the way back to early when he was there, he said, you can't make the people work 7 days a week because then they won't have the koyach, they need a day off. So a miracle happened and Pari gave him Shabbos off. So therefore he said, you know, go work. What are you chucking a Chinese with this? Go do what you have to do. Okay.